Whiskey and Zorn. Whiskey and Zorn. Sounding his horn. Hope is reborn.
Eric Zorn is here, but Eric, that's not your usual theme song. What happened?
It's another musical number from that old Son of Zorn TV show on
I
Fox.
Like this one better because I want my Eric Zorn with whiskey.
With whiskey.
Yeah, it helps me go down easier. Yeah, it's true. It's definitely easier to, my opinions are easier to take when you're a little bit drunk. I've never been so glad to have my name rhyme with barley corn.
Yeah, is that fun?
So it actually works
That's
out
excellent.
Really well. Yeah, so it works out pretty well.
Eric, we know that for years you and Doris Day were what they call an item.
Well, I don't like to talk about it.
Is it too uncomfortable?
Know about it. Well, it is, and she was right. A little bit older than I was.
Yeah, just a little.
Was she one of these people, honestly, I have to ask this.
Yeah.
Did you know that she was
still
alive?
Wendy thought she was dead.
I thought she was already gone.
I mean, God rest
God
her soul
her.
And all that other stuff,
yeah.
But when I saw that she died, I went, oh.
Yeah.
Again?
Well, I didn't think that, but I just thought, well, I would have thought she was
dead. Yeah.
I was talking about how she came in toward the tail end of what they call the golden age of Hollywood. She was coming in right at the very end. And I said, we really have almost nobody left from those days. Mary Vandeveld said, well, Olivia de Havilland is still around, and she is. And then there's one other person that a bunch of texters mentioned, a guy. Can you think of who that would be?
Absolutely not.
Kirk Douglas.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
He was 102, I think.
He's still alive, too.
Yeah,
he was at that awards show a couple years
ago.
You could have played the alive or dead game with me, and I would have said Kirk Douglas
was gone.
Dead, yeah.
But there's a couple of other random people that are still around, but from the golden era of Hollywood, almost
honestly,
nobody.
Honestly, most of my exposure to Doris Day was in that TV show she had.
The Doris Day Show.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my memory of her, because I'm kind of old, too. So.
Do you remember, I mentioned this earlier when we were talking about Doris Day, on the show, the original premise of the show was her on-camera husband, they never showed him, but he had passed away. So she took her two boys from San Francisco and moved them out to the town she grew up in, a very rural setting, right? And then a couple years into the show, they just abandoned that idea, and she went to work for a major, like a celebrity fashion magazine. And everybody who was on the show, the boys, her two sons, no more mention of them. Her father, who she lived with, no more mention of him. It was just like a complete 180.
And it was a new Darren.
And
she woke up and it was all a dream.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Yeah, they just keep changing those shows.
Chuck Cunningham from Happy Days vanished. It's crazy.
So, yeah. Now, they used Que Sera Sera for the theme song for that show. But that song was associated with her from an earlier movie, right?
Right. From The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm never going to play Trivial Pursuit with Bill Leff.
Man Who Knew Too Much.
Isn't Angela Lansbury still alive?
She is still alive.
So she's up there, too,
I think. Yeah. There's a couple stragglers, thankfully, but it's sad. That whole era of all those big stars, almost everybody's gone.
She's 93, Angela Lansbury.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, there you go.
Eric, several topics that you've brought in today, many of them a little bit on the downside. You know that.
I don't know.
Are these upbeat? Do you think these are upbeat? One of them has to do with a book about violent crime. What can you tell us about that?
This is a book by Alex Kotlowitz, who is a local journalism treasure. And I mean, he's a friend of mine. I've known him for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called An American Summer. And he writes, and it's about violence in Chicago, and it's loosely set in 2013, but it has a lot of spillover, because these stories about violence and the way violence impacts people is not just a one event. I think we see them as members of the public. We'll see the story on the news, or we'll see a story in the paper, and then we won't really know the story that came before or afterwards. And one of the stories in this book that was very interesting is about a guy named Romain Hill. And he was a guy who lived over by the old Cabrini Green, and one day he was shot in the back by a gang member. He's outside working on a car with somebody, he's shot in the back. The gang member was trying to kill or shoot somebody else, and he bicycled by. And Hill, who was 19 at the time, identified him and told police about him, and he snitched, in street lingo.
Right.
And so they were able to get this guy, through his testimony, he did not actually have to testify in court because his witness presentation was so strong that the guy ended up pleading guilty, and he's still in prison. He's got 15 years, mm-hmm. 15 years. But after this, after it became clear that this guy was going to go to prison, a lot of the friends of this of the shooter put a lot of pressure on Hill to recant, to say, you know, you didn't, and this happens a lot. And this is, people talk about the code of the streets and people not cooperating with police. And what Kalowitz talks about in this book is that it's not an honor code. It's not like people are sticking together because they're a community and they're against the police. It's fear. And it's fear of what happened to Romaine Hill. And the story, I think, got started for Alex Kotlowitz when he saw the news story a couple of years later about Romaine Hill walking through Seward Park over by Cooperini Green. Yeah. And somebody came up behind him and shot him in the head and killed him. And then when you peel that story back, you discover that this was almost certainly a retaliatory killing. Kotlowitz in the book writes that he knows who killed Romaine Hill. Everybody knows who killed him, yeah. But nobody will testify. Nobody who saw him. There were witnesses in the middle of the day. But people know that when you are a witness to a crime like this in these communities, a great deal of pressure gets put on you to the point, you know, threats,
right.
Bribes, often that it is not as easy as maybe some of us think who live in safer neighborhoods and say, oh, he did it.
Yeah.
I'll go to court. I'll testify. And like I say, Kotlowitz talks about the fact that, you know, we think as we sit in our safe neighborhoods that, oh, these people in these neighborhoods, they have no honor, they have no morality, they're allowing this to happen in their communities. And what Alex is saying is that they have a legitimate fear, as is portrayed in that incident with Romaine Hill. And there's a little aside in this story, and it talks about a kid named Jose, and this is a kid who was a Chicago kid who shot in the mouth, I think several times, had to undergo extensive reconstructive surgery. They put him into a coma for a while, and when he went to testify in court, he kept saying, I don't remember. He knew who shot him, but he said, I don't remember, I don't know, I can't recall. And it turns out that his mother is someone who has the job of working in the juvenile court system trying to persuade people to testify. It's her. She works as a victim yeah. advocate to trying to get them to go to court to testify. And Kotlowitz talks to her, and she says, you know, yeah, this is my job, and I try to talk people into doing this, but when it comes to my own family, I am not going to risk this. And that really, to me, that story, that little story, on top of the Romaine Hill story, really tells you about why people are afraid to yeah. cooperate the way we think that they should. Rahm Emanuel gave a speech last year. Remember, there was a really violent weekend in Chicago last August, like 72 people were shot, something like that, and 12 were killed in one weekend. And Rahm gets up in front of people and he's like, you know, you people in the community, you've got to speak up, you've got to speak out. This is your problem. And it's so easy to say that from our position of relative safety, but when you're in that neighborhood, it's so difficult. And anyway, but this whole book is a series of stories. It's not all just, you know, individual street yeah. crimes like this. It is about the connections that people have to crime. It's about the victims. It's about the perpetrators.
The surviving family members
surviving
as well.
Family members, absolutely, and the people who try to help them. It's not a prescriptive book. It doesn't tell you what we have to do. Alex doesn't come in and say, or Kotlowitz doesn't come in and say, here's how to solve this problem. He is an observer. He wrote the book, There Are No Children Here. Do you remember that book? It's about 25 years old now, maybe more, about kids growing up in Cabrini Green. A very, very important book. I think Oprah made a movie out of it, maybe. But anyway, he's a really good observer, chronicler of the urban scene.
Yeah.
And he spent a long time. I guess originally he had like 6 months to do this book, and it took him like 4 or 5 years because so many of these stories are longitudinal.
Sure.
You start with somebody and you got to follow them. You follow them through the prison system. You follow them through the hospital system. You follow through these things. So if you want to understand violence in Chicago as we come up to yet another summer, what's probably going to have a lot of violence associated with it, you should definitely get this book, An American Summer.
That's Eric Zorn. We'll talk more to Eric right after these messages. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. Eric, we're going to switch gears to a different story, but just a quick follow-up to our last segment about the violence in Chicago. What's happening differently in Chicago than other major metropolitan cities? Why, as the weather warms up, we know that every weekend's just going to be brutal here in the United States, here in Chicago, in terms of violence, gang violence. What's going on in this city as opposed to other cities?
Well, one of the things that they talk about is the fact that the anti-gang efforts 15, 20 years ago, what they ended up doing was they had several large street gangs, and they went after the leaders of these gangs, put a lot of them in prison. And so what ended up happening was that a lot of these gangs splintered into what they call cliques.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have these people who used to be in the same gang now controlling much smaller territories and fighting one another over these smaller bits of turf. And so the idea of we're going to break up the gangs by cutting off the head, that it ended up just creating all this other problem. That's the one theory why Chicago is worse than a lot of other cities. Now, the other thing that's true is that per capita, Chicago's murder rate is not the highest in the country. There are other cities that are smaller than ours that have higher murder rates.
Yeah.
But because of the sheer number that we have here, and we have more than, you know, L.A. and New York
yeah.
and those places, even though they've got more people. But per capita, we're not the leading one in the country. So that's what the big problem is here. Now, in terms of, I mean, one of the things that I mentioned in the column was, you know, even though the book doesn't prescribe things, it's like the answer to this is more jobs, better schools, better housing.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things are just really restricting access to guns, make sure that you don't have illegal guns all over the place. Those four things are just really big lifts, really
right.
heavy lifts.
Right.
And, you know, every city suffers with that, but Chicago does in particular. So,
you wanted to talk about something in the New York Times.
I did. There was a really interesting story today in the Times, and it's about the 5G apocalypse. Have you heard about this?
A little bit.
Well, the idea is that Russia Today, the propaganda arm of the Russian government that has this, you know, news network that
yeah.
I guess runs on some cable systems. I don't think it runs on the one that I get, but they're putting out this story. You know, 5G is the new cellular phone technology.
Right.
Which is not available yet on any server.
I guess there are some isolated places in the country that are rolling it out, but
really?
It's the coming thing, and it is much fast. Most of us have 4G right now. 5G is apparently, you know, twice as fast at least, and it's going to allow the kind of instantaneous back and forth that's going to be really good for, say, self-driving cars and for synchronous gaming and
yeah.
things like that.
There's
actually no lag time at all. And apparently it's going to be a huge boon, economic boon. So what's happening is that the Russian propaganda arm, first of all, Putin is all excited about 5G in Russia,
mm-hmm.
but his propaganda arm, this network, is putting out all these stories, and this is on the front page of the Times today, trying to get people in America to be afraid of 5G and talking about, you know, that this is like subjecting yourself to doses of X-rays and so on. And it's all a lie. It's all, you know, fake news, to use an expression, that you look at the spectrum, and people say that if anything, the 5G thing is less dangerous. Not that these cell phone signals are particularly dangerous to people, but that this new technology, there's nothing at all true about this, and yet they're trying to sow this panic. And this is an example of what's gone on in the last couple of years in this country with outside influence. When
yeah.
they're talking about the Russian influence on the election, what they are trying to do, what they have done successfully in a lot of cases, and in a partisan fashion, is put these stories out that divide us, that get us all angry and fearful. And when you look at it through a partisan lens, when you say, like, okay, this is an attempt to boost Republican candidates or whatever, you can get people angry at each other just about that subject. But what's happened here is that we have this technology, and whoever's going to control the 5G technology, who's ever going to own this and be the best at it, is
yeah.
going to have an incredible economic advantage. This is not a left-right issue right now. This is Russia attacking American business,
right.
American industry. This is a thing where it's just an economic dagger thrown at us. And you have people out there who believe this stuff. You've got the anti-vaxxers, right? You've got the climate change deniers. You've got people who won't microwave their food because they think it's going to irradiate it.
Yeah.
So when you play on the fears of these people and you exacerbate them, and when you look like you're a real news organization and you're putting out these stories that are fake, that are designed to gin up this anger
uh-huh.
and get people so that they might put in a thing in a community saying, we're going to block this. We're not going to have 5G in our community because it's going to make our children grow a third arm. and so, you know, this is an example of, I think this is an example that we can get our minds around. What I really enjoyed about this story, or thought that was really important about it, was that this is a story that every American, except the paranoid nuts, are going to be able to get their minds around. Like, this is what Russia is doing.
Yeah.
This is the danger of these unmediated social media networks getting these fake stories out there, that they get us all angry at each other, and they get us all angry at our industry and our business, and it's going to hurt us. So I thought this is a story that's, I think, fascinating.
And it's in the New York Times today for people who want to read more.
Yeah, the front page, New York Times, you can probably go for free. So.
Great to see you. We'll see you a week from today. It's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Read him whenever you get a chance. We'll take a quick break and get you some news and then hand things over to Steve.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Eric Rung from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.